$500? What do you have, Rico?
Noah's Ark, the Atlantis, and the Holy Grail? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Indiana Jones Universe, a podcast in which we learn more about the character of Indiana Jones, exploring other content in the Indiana Jones Universe. As always, I'm Will.
And I'm Max.
And thanks for joining us for episode 45, in which today we're going to continue our discussion of the great Marvel comic series, The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, with issue number 24, Revenge of the Ancients. In this one, Indy travels to Central America and goes after a rival archaeologist named Siegfried Klecks, who is attempting to destroy an ancient Mayan structure that has gems, precious metals, and tons of relics. And Indy tries to stop him from destroying the entire structure to find these secret antiquities within. And of course, Indy is there to save the day and fight some bad guys along the way, as always. So in another great issue of this comic series, let's get started, shall we?
We shall. You know I mention this in every single episode, but I love the cover on these. You know, they're so beautiful. This one is so simplistic, yet at the same time, it is so very complex and detailed. You know, there are those faces that are carved into the stone on the side, and you know, there's that glow emitting from the big stone in the middle that Indy and the lady are standing in front of. And I really love how they added that glow. It really gives it a very mysterious feel.
Yeah, definitely. I like how the cover art here does reflect what actually happens in this comic so well, you know. And another thing that's interesting too, as I've even thought about this as we keep mentioning these covers, is keep in mind that these are actually separate drawings and not actually, you know, scenes from the comic that are taken and adapted on the front. The cover art is actually entirely different, has a different art style, of course, as well. So very interesting there. And it does kind of remind me, like you said, kind of like the Panama level from SOK, with that same sort of idea of Indy going after Mayan ruins in this one. Very, very interesting, especially with that same sort of art style on there as well. And this one starts off in a very interesting way, as Indy actually is walking home in San Francisco, which we don't see a lot, but that is a location that has been used in the Indiana Jones universe plenty of times, so it is kind of a nice flashback to that, especially that's from SOK as well.
Yes, it is. And, you know, another thing I like is Indy actually mentions the Natural Museum instead of, you know, Marshall College or Barnett College. You know, it's very, very interesting that you actually see that, and that, you know, it's not referred to as whatever college he's working at.
Yeah, I did notice that as well. They keep calling it the National Museum, and that's not something I think that all us Indy fans are very familiar with. Of course, Marcus does call it the National Museum a few times, I think, in the movies, but it is known to us as Marshall College or Barnett College later as well. And I did find that interesting. They really stress this idea of the National Museum, especially in one of the earlier comics where we talked about how Marion now starts working there as kind of this journalist. And they do bring it up as the National Museum, I guess, to kind of maybe stress this idea of antiquities and stuff. And we do kind of see them at the museum or Marshall College, for example, lots of times throughout these comics. So bringing again that continuity in these comics is really, really awesome, and I enjoyed that. Again, another thing that's interesting here is the way this opens. You don't have any sort of traditional prologue. We have a lot of inner thoughts from Indy, and we've talked about this before, and we also talked about this in the Young Indy book adaptations, in which we have these ideas of Indy's inner thoughts and getting a little bit of a glimpse inside of that instead of actual straight dialogue. And it does add something to these comics that I really enjoy here, as we, you know, kind of see how Indy is a little bit hesitant to meet with this guy named Rico, who supposedly has info on this brand new adventure, and that you can't always trust him. He's kind of like the middleman with all these sort of archaeological dealings. And I like how we get a glimpse into that in this very sort of suspenseful opening kind of cover here.
Yeah, definitely. We do get a very small glimpse into it. And it's very, very interesting, you know. It's not so much of a glimpse as it is kind of like a foreshadowing to what's going to happen, I guess, in a way. You know, because, well, as you'll see later in the book, or later in the comic, my bad, you know, it's very, it does tie into the story. And, you know, it keeps building on itself. But, you know, moving on to the next scene, Indy does end up meeting with Rico. He turns down kind of this side, very narrow, kind of, yeah, very narrow, dark, you know, alley, as he describes it. And he meets Rico, right, coming out of this building. And Rico is coughing, but we're not exactly sure why.
Right, and it's kind of interesting. We see that in the dialogue a little bit. He keeps coughing a little bit, and he tells Indy, you know, we can't talk about this here. And then he says, you know, how much money do you need? And of course, that was the quote from today. He's like, $500, you know? And then we see that scene in which there's actually a knife in his back, and he was sort of like stabbed in the back there. And immediately we hear a phone ring. And I love that they had to include the quote there. I've got a bad feeling about this, right as, of course, the phone rings and he gets stabbed right there.
Of course. And, you know, he goes to answer the phone. He's like, a phone ringing with nobody around to answer except me. And he picks it up and answers it. And there's nobody there. But all of a sudden he hears a big, he hears something in the background.
Yeah, this took a quick turn, actually. Yeah, he goes into this, like, phone booth thing. And like you said, there's just the phone ringing there. And no one answers and nothing comes for him. You know, there's no one there. And then we see this like, car coming straight towards him. And he gets stuck in the phone booth. He can't actually open the door. It was like a whole trap, he thought. So then he tries to push it over as we see this, like, you know, quick, I like this idea of like Indy's sort of traits of like quick thinking, you know, decision making, that sort of stuff. We really do get a lot of that here, which we see in the movies, but we don't, you know, necessarily explicitly see him think about that, whereas we do in these comics. And that's what I like here as well, when he quickly thinks about, okay, I'm going to push this over. And then we realize that the car is actually like this huge semi-trailer that just comes zooming in, and we see Indy there, and it's hilarious, and it breaks both, and he, you know, he's like, oh, that was a close call, and kind of decides to bolt after it and take this shortcut, and we see that great little drawing there of him grasping onto the back ladder of that truck there. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge tanker that comes by him, and it's hilarious, and he's like, wait, come back here, and, you know, he basically, he grabs onto it, and he's like, gotcha, and he, you know, basically hangs on for dear life, climbing up to the top, and then this big, muscular guy with a wrench comes out on the top, and is like, time to take care of Indy.
Yeah, I know. It literally reminded me of the fist fight in the Flying Wing. It looked just like him, you know. And he comes up on the top of that, you know, truck there with this huge wrench, and he's like, "Take it easy, guy." You know, it's hilarious. And we get this like little truck chase here, and I love as well how this does feel like Harrison Ford. And I really want to acknowledge the writers for these comics. They did such a good job of bringing back the spirit of the movies, which is something that we've talked about in Young Indy, that they kind of wanted to steer away from. Whereas here, you could tell they were very fixated on doing that because they were trying to add something new, but also make it seem like Indiana Jones. And in some ways, I think you could argue that the comics do a better job of giving us a glimpse of the movies rather than Young Indy, which is ironic considering that this is, you know, on paper and not on screen. But it's very interesting to compare the two in terms of how do they adapt things to Indy. We've talked about that there's a lot of subtleties in Young Indy that lead to the movies, whereas here, there are some very obvious things that are, you know, tailored towards the movies.
Right, definitely. I mean, you know, there are action scenes kind of like this in the movie. So, in a way, they are taking some from the movies, but in a way, it's more prominent here in the comic because they're not limited to, you know, whatever restrictions like PG or whatever. Here they can do whatever they want because it's a comic book.
Right, exactly. So there's a little bit more freedom there, which I like. And speaking of that, one thing I wanted to mention about this, actually, I like how they kind of change things up a little bit here. And actually, when on the third page of the comic, they had the kind of opening text title, which reminded me of like a movie kind of style, Revenge of the Ancients right there. I like how they had that at the top there.
Yeah, definitely. I, you know, I was confused when I first opened the book to read it because, you know, I opened it up and, you know, oh, there's no title. Where is it? Well, I got to the third page. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. You know, so in a way it is, they are taking a lot of things from movies. I mean, I wonder if maybe this one was supposed to be a movie at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, that is very interesting. I'm curious as to like how they came up with all these ideas because they did release all these pretty quickly. I think it was a matter of like 3 years, if I remember correctly, like I think 1983 to 1986, and they got 34 of these done. So, I mean, they quickly like put all these together. So I'm wondering, like, were these all brand new original ideas? Did George Lucas have some of these ideas? I mean, obviously, unfortunately, we didn't hear any about these in the Forgotten Adventures of Indiana Jones that we did last week. But yeah, that would be cool to find out. Like, where did they come up with these awesome ideas and who did come up with them? You know, because I know for a lot of the video games and stuff, especially the Star Wars ones, George Lucas has to approve all the stuff. Usually he comes out and, you know, is kind of recruited and kind of they talk over the plot and the main basis. I wonder if they did that here or not. Very interesting, especially to consider as well. Temple of Doom gets made, like, I think, I can't remember what issue they had already released at this time, but like right in the middle of releasing these issues, Temple of Doom came out. And so some of these were before and some of them were after as well.
Yeah. So, you know, as you said, it's very, very interesting. And another thing I like actually about this scene is that, you know, the guy finally gets a hold of Indy and he's like, now I kill you. And then he's like, hold that pose, Fatso. And, you know, then Indy ducks down and the guy just gets, you know, splatted on a bridge.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of hilarious. Yeah, we see this huge, like, train bridge coming up. And, you know, I love that, like, little drawing there of we see kind of like a widescreen shot there of Indy and, yeah, like you said, the guy with the wrench there. And it's hilarious. Yeah, he's just like, just hold that pose for a second. And he doesn't see the bridge coming behind him. And, yeah, I love how also as well this idea of kind of like Indy stowing away on this truck, you know. It does kind of remind me of Harrison Ford, just kind of like, you know, kind of like in the desert chase sequence almost a little bit. You know, he gets on the horse, just jumps in the back of the truck, and then just, you know, hijacks his way into the driver's seat. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, I like that they add that.
Right. Unfortunately, he was not able to hijack his way into the driver's seat this time, because that would have been fun if Indy was driving a semi. But,
right.
but he did actually follow them into their, like, secret little bunker underground where the, you know, guys are talking with these other criminals.
Yeah, and unlike the other comics, we don't transition from a prologue back to Marshall College or anything. We just get right into it here, which is kind of interesting. And you kind of get that sense here in this scene when you really realize that the actual kind of story has already started here. And yeah, they pull into this like deserted factory, and Indy actually finds a prisoner in the truck, this lady. And he can't talk to her right now as he notices some of the other guys are coming back here. And I like as well how These kind of like drawings and these shots that they do in the comic, and I guess this is for all comics, but at least when I think of the indie style in terms of the way the movies were shot as well, they do kind of have that movie style. You know, sometimes they have those little close-ups on Indy, whereas other times they're shots. And I like how it gives you, I like that sense of comics, you know, kind of like almost like a movie storyboard, I guess you could say. I do like that. It adds a little bit, especially it works well with Indiana Jones too, as you do kind of see a lot of various shots in the movies. If you really break down Raiders, they do a lot of that stuff and really kind of use the cinematography to its full potential and giving you that classic adventure feel.
Right, you know, that's what I love about comic books. You know, they could literally condense a movie down into like 50 pages, which would be a long comic book, but still, they could, because, you know, instead of just having one scene that drags on for minutes, here you have like one scene that is like one section of a page, you know, versus, you know, one scene that's, you know, minutes long. This, you can just put all the dialogue and the scene in one little shot. Now, yes, there's not as much detail and depth, but that's the fun of reading a comic book. It's not supposed to be as in-depth or detailed as a movie is.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. Like, I do like how these are just quick stories you can read in a whim. You know, you don't, they don't have the sort of extravagance of the movies. And in this sense, they are like kind of these quick stories that you can read that are just a little bit fun. They give you that sort of indie spirit, but they don't go too in-depth into anything. And so, yeah, that is what's kind of fun about these, is they do get straight to the point and are just kind of quick stories. And, you know, there's 34 issues of these, so in a sense, they all add up together and create a great storyline. And here we have another great Indy moment, as we see that this guy comes over to try to take Indy, and he just gives him a good old right hook and grabs the revolver and points it right at him, you know, just turns right on him there. And I love that. And it cuts to this next scene like 20 minutes later. We have this great quote there, you know, this might be a wild goose chase. And we kind of see this, you know, hidden treasure sort of ship going away, this like steamboat, as Indy's kind of at the dock there and just decides to just jump off the dock into the water and swim after it.
Yeah, and also I love right as he's about to jump off the dock, the cab driver says, "Hey Mac, you forgot your change." That's like such like, that's like what, isn't that like what every cab driver has ever called every single passenger?
Right.
Hey Mac, like I've always heard that. like as a saying, but I've never heard that in real life. Like,
yeah,
like,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
it's like a stereotypical cab driver, I guess you could say.
Right, they did add that flair in there. I did notice that. Like, they could have just left that out, but that's funny that they threw that in there as kind of an ode to that, I guess. And yeah, I love how he just like jumps off the dock and swims after the steamboat. I mean, obviously that steamboat is not zooming, but I mean, it's just funny. And I love how they also show him grab onto the hat as it falls off, you know, when he jumps in there. I like that as well. And this next scene here, my gosh, it is a complete mirror scene to what happens in Raiders on Katanga's ship. I really love that they did this here. If you look at this closely, it's basically what this is. And, you know, because Indy kind of climbs up the side of the boat, he already kind of hears everyone talking, right? And then we also see him kind of in that large sort of tube, right? Just like in Raiders, as he's, you know, kind of listening in. And we finally get introduced to the villain here, who is, his name is Klex. And he also has a sort of monocle thing, like the last villain in the last comic as well. And I also love the name of their ship here, kind of like, I guess kind of an ode to the name of Katanga's ship in terms of the Bantu Wind. Here, of course, it's the Capricorn Queen. So I kind of like that they always did that. And they kind of talk about how that Jones is going to follow them along and cause trouble. But one of the guys claims that he always survives, of course. Meanwhile, he's listening in on this.
Right. I mean, he's like, this Jones fellow, he's dangerous. And, you know, he's like, he's dead. And then he's like, goes again. He's what he's thinking, like, as he's about to climb up and introduce himself.
Right. And speaking of which, I love that scene in Raiders, by the way. We got to talk about that because that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Two parts of that scene. That entire scene with Katanga is brilliant because, you know, right when Indy gets taken before then, and it kind of feels like the end of the movie, you know, and then it transitions into this brand new scene with, you know, Captain Katanga. And I love how he always listens in. And there's that guy there, you know, he's listening in, and we have that great shot of like Katanga and Belloc and Marianne, and you just see Indy's head right there. It's fantastic. And then, of course, First Mate and Katanga, you know, where's Dr. Jones? And they see him on the other one. And that salute, oh, I love that scene when he just gives him the classic salute. And that's one of the first times in the movie we hear that, like, full-on Indiana Jones theme play. We hear, like, odes of it in, like, Desert Chase and Flight from Peru. But that actually full-on Indy motif and Ride to the Nazi Hideout is blaring there as he gives him that classic salute. Love that scene.
Oh, that is a great scene. You know, it's just so amazing how, you know, especially just the music in the movies. Now, I know this is not related to the comic, but the music in the movies goes so well and is suited so perfectly to, you know, what is happening in that scene, and it's great.
It definitely is, yeah. I love it. It's just a fun moment in those movies, you know?
Yeah, and something I wanted to mention right before the scene where he climbs up on the ship is, like, as his hat falls off, he's thinking to himself, these bay currents are treacherous. If I don't reach that bucket of bolts soon, I'm finished. And I'm wondering if he's referring to the guy or the boat.
Right. It's hilarious. I love these, the language here that they're using. A very Harrison Ford, you know, oh, these currents are treacherous. You know, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, that was funny. I was wondering, is he referring to, Klex or the actual boat?
Right.
Hilarious.
Right, because if he's referring to Klex, well, that's an insult. If he's referring to boats, well, it's still an insult, but that's not the point.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And I also like this idea, again, we've seen this in the comics before, this idea of continuity, and we have, again, a brand new rival archaeologist, kind of their motives are wealth and power. We see that right from the start here, as we don't really know what he's after, but we see that close-up on his face, and he has that whole sort of dialogue scene there in which he talks about, like, oh, I want the structure for the antiquities inside of it, and I'm going to be so powerful, wealth, all that kind of same themes are reoccurring here in this villain, which I guess is a little bit cliche, but I think it is sort of an ode to the comics. You know, the villains are a lot more complex in the movies, but here they're more simplistic, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I completely 100% agree. They are more Klex, and, you know, instead of just there being Belloc here, you know, there's Klex, and then there is his henchmen who actually have dialogue here, where Tote literally has just one tiny scene and then never speaks again, basically.
Right, exactly. So that's really kind of interesting how we have those kind of interesting characterizations that are, you know, quite different. You know, no, we don't have enough time in these comics to expand upon any characters in a lot of depth. Of course, there are some comics that bring back some great characters. There's that one, of course, where Sala comes back as well, and of course we've seen Marcus and, you know, We've seen Marcus and Mary in a lot of these. There's one with Jock and Captain Katanga. So, you know, plenty of characters that come back. But here with these new ones, you really don't have a lot of time to really kind of develop them enough. So it does kind of add a little bit more simplicity to it, as Indy can just knock them out in 2 seconds. But, you know, it is kind of fun. Again, the same idea of Indy going after these rival archaeologists who go after wealth and power. And it also transitions into the next scene when they finally get on the shore there. They jump overboard and swim to shore, and we find out that the girl's name is Julia, but we don't really know what she's doing here.
Yeah, we don't exactly know what she was doing on the ship or why she was, you know, held prisoner, but, you know, she and Indy end up making it to shore, but not quick enough, as Klex and all the guards kind of basically show up on shore.
Right, and one thing I found was interesting there is the art style reminded me a lot of that scene from Africa Screams. Very similar, as they kind of get taken there, and we get introduced to this huge sort of Mayan structure as Klex basically unveils his entire plan to Indy right then and there. And you're like, okay. And we get introduced to that same sort of style as Africa Screams, you know, which I found kind of be interesting, you know, because Indy was with Marion, they both get taken, and we see similar shots of all of them going there, and this same idea of this sort of ritual. This comic does kind of take some ideas from Temple of Doom, in the sense that it focuses kind of on the occult and the ritual, and we see that here, actually, with this whole kind of new scene that we get introduced to.
Yeah, definitely. It's a brand new scene where they kind of, you know, something I love is they kind of transition into the next morning with a little kind of circle at the end of the page before we move on to the next scene, which is really, really cool. I like that design.
Yeah, I noticed that too. They had that little kind of circle and there was that plane kind of in there. That's cool. Yeah, I've never noticed that from any of the other comics. Just kind of a cool, like, transitional element, I guess you could say.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, then we kind of transition to this camp-ish area where, you know, they're kind of like they're at the temple, you know, that is surrounded by what looks like water. And then that plane that we saw before lands, right? And, you know, Indy and Julia are, you know, being held prisoner and being used to help as they go into the temple.
Yeah, and we get introduced to this, like, Mayan ruin, and there's basically this vault that has a ton of antiquities, but no one actually knows what's inside of it. It's super, super old, and so basically, kind of similar, this is kind of like a mix of basically, like, Temple of Doom and, like, the Well of the Souls, I guess. It was a really cool kind of mix of those two ideas, as we explain that there is this idea of the Temple of Doom sacrifice, and we see kind of this, Julia is kind of going to be Willy in this situation, as she kind of is going to be sacrificed in order for this to work, which is horrible, and there's that kind of twist with the idea of the Well of the Souls, as the sun has to strike the pyramid once a year at the exact same time, and then the entire structure will actually crumble from the light beam shining through. And then Indy will actually, you know, or whoever will be able to go inside the actual temple then. So kind of a, you know, cool sort of take on this idea of, you know, the medallion and the Well of Souls and how it shines on the pinpoint, the location, and then kind of mixing that with this idea of the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, definitely. It is the same kind of thing. And, you know, I love the dialogue here, you know, where Indy says, "You're sick, Klex," and he's like, "Really? Sick?" And he's like, "Jones, you're so clean. Next to you, a sewer rat is clean."
Right, yeah.
I'm like, that's very interesting choice of dialogue there, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I also love how you do kind of have this idea of Indy being kept prisoner. He's watching over this whole thing as, you know, Klex clearly thinks he's, you know, he's got all the whole thing wrapped up and he's going to get all the power from this. And, you know, he just wants Indy to sit there and watch just for the sheer pleasure of it, you know. And, you know, they do kind of talk about how this has taken years for him to actually kind of put this together. And so that's kind of where his motive of power comes from. It's taken him 10 years to be able to finally figure out, to kind of decipher these tablets and figure out where the location of the actual two structures were. And meanwhile, we cut to a scene here in which Indy grabs his pocket knife and tries to cut the rope that are kind of tying his hands as this sacrifice is beginning.
Right, and, you know, right as Indy, once he's loose from the pillar, Indy, you know, shoves one of the guys off the platform, and they all see him and tell the other guys to start shooting at him because Indy is gonna go and rescue Julia, and then, you know, he's gonna foil all of Klex's plans to have the whole world in his hands.
Yeah, the way I like to summarize this is Indy goes to town. I mean,
yeah,
that's basically what happens here. I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, we kind of see him, you know, he cuts the pocket knife just barely and then immediately knocks over Klex and his other henchmen and jumps over the other side, grabs onto Julia as she's just, as you know, the rope is barely burning there, grabs onto her, and we see that the light beam actually shifts. And the slab tilts and the vault is breached, and as it, you know, falls over, and this kind of idea again of like the complete destruction of this, you know, ancient relic and this site here. And we also have a very similar scene to the end of Raiders here, as now that the structure has actually collapsed, all the light is just kind of dispersing out, and it's so blinding that it's actually creating flames. And so a similar idea of sort of Belloc and, you know, Tote at the end of Raiders, that sort of idea of, you know, their lust for power actually ends up killing them, that kind of juxtaposition there. And very similar to the idea of Raiders at the end.
Right. It's very, very interesting. And I love the last kind of scene here where, you know, it's kind of the stone with the burst of light and flame shooting out the side. It really reminds me of what happens, you know, at the end of Raiders, as you said. It really is very, very similar, and I really like it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, one thing I kind of noticed from this comic is all of these comics follow a very similar structure, and just generally speaking, this idea of the hero's quest, you know, traditional fictional writing. You know, and even the movies follow that sort of same idea as well, even though, you know, obviously those are a little bit more detailed and don't go as, you know, simplistic as these comics. But this general idea of the hero's quest really, I think, is utilized very, very well in these comics. We see that happen, right? All of these comics kind of function in the same way. You have this opening prologue, right? And then it gets to kind of, you know, the actual adventure and then the final climax. And then it just goes right down to kind of the end of and sort of the falling point of the actual story here and sort of the ending. And I like how they do kind of all follow the same structure. I mean, it is a little bit, you know, kind of, you get a little bit sick of it, I guess you could say, as we kind of know what's going to happen in all these comics. But the structure is the same, and so it does build, like we said, a mode of continuity in the sense that all these comics follow a very specific structure. And in that sense, you're kind of getting a very similar adventure, but something a little bit different added to it.
Right, and, you know, I love that how they do that, you know. It is definitely very, very different in a way, but it's also the very same as, you know, Raiders, which I really, really love. How, you know, I love how that there's some difference between Raiders and this, but there's also some similarities. Because if it was the exact same, then it wouldn't be a comic. It would just be a boring ripoff of Raiders.
Right, exactly. So that's a great point. You know, it does add something that I think is brand new. And, you know, these aren't too similar to the movies, even though obviously these have so many, like, you know, obvious things that are similar to the movies. They are a little bit different and more lighthearted. And, you know, they do remind you of Harrison Ford. That's what I love about these. The dialogue and the writing, to me, is the best part of these because they sound like things Harrison Ford would say. And we get a glimpse into his thoughts, you know, making it up as you go, that kind of stuff. And so that transitions sort of to the end of the comic here in which unfortunately, the entire chamber explodes, which I found this ending and this kind of second half to be very similar to the second part of Africa Screams. Same sort of idea there, as they unfortunately never get to see the treasure. We actually don't know if there was even ever any treasure in there, because all of it unfortunately actually kind of gets destroyed there. And again, very similar idea to Temple of Doom and Raiders, kind of that mix there of the ending. And we see kind of Indy grab Klex's monocle there, which I like, and Indy and Julia walk off. And I love how she mentions that she wanted to be an archaeologist at one point. She's like, "Now I'm not so sure." Yeah, classic.
Right, definitely. I really agree. And, you know, I love how they're all kind of running away from the temple as it, right before it explodes, because their hair, they're all burning and they're all on fire and, you know, they're running away. And then Indy and Julia, you know, they just barely escape into a cave right as the whole thing explodes and they're protected from it, which is, you know, it's just, they just barely escape with almost zero time to spare.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the final scene there, which also took a similar element from the other comics, as we see this hand creep up as on the last drawing of the comic. And they kind of explain, you know, but one man survived who has a lust for power and lots of evil, you know, something, you know, cliche like that. And we realize that it's Klex's hand grabbing his monocle that was kind of in sort of the dust and the rock, and oh, to be continued, you know, they leave it at that, and yeah, so, and that's the end of the comic there, and, you know, I do like how they kind of added that, how we never really know if this villain is going to return, but he's, of course, in the comic and adds that sort of fun element to the end. And one thing I wanted to mention, actually, that I found from this comic that's interesting to keep in mind, first of all, there was no love interest in this. We don't see any sort of love interest between Indy and Julie at this point, which is kind of different than most of these comics. And secondly, there was not any mention or use of the whip in this comic at all. Very, very interesting. There were only a few fist fights, and both of those were just classic fist fights. There was no use of the whip at all in this entire comic, which I found to be very, very interesting.
I completely agree. They could have used the whip in some places in here, but I think in a way they probably, it wasn't needed. The fist fights were good how they were, and you know, instead of the whip, I guess there was the wrench that big guy was using in the beginning.
Right. Yeah, but it is kind of interesting to see, you know, the whip not there. I mean, I guess the whip is usually like the forefront in all these comics, but they did kind of change things up a bit, and that's fine. I mean, we don't see the whip in Young Indy really at all. So yeah, kind of interesting there. And speaking of, what do we think of this one? Just overall thoughts on Revenge of the Ancients here.
You know what? I like this comic. I really do. I like the fact that there, you know, there's classic fistfights, because in some of the other ones, it's only, you know, it's only that they have the whip. They don't have any classic fistfights. Here, they only have classic fistfights. So I think it's kind of like a balance there. And I also like how, you know, we're not in the same place all the time in this comic. You know, we're really changing scenes a lot, and I like the similarity, but also the difference to Raiders. It really, really, you know, kind of puts the authenticity as it's an original indie adventure.
Yeah, I completely agree with you 100% there. I think another A-plus job by the writers and everyone doing these comics. They completely knocked it out of the park again. And like you said, striking that balance between giving us something more simplistic and more fun and lighthearted, but also going against the original tradition of Indiana Jones. And one thing that I think some people don't realize, and I certainly didn't realize it myself, is that when these comics came out in the 1980s, they were a big deal. I mean, if you think about it, you know, the Marvel comics back then did not have the sort of tons of Marvel movies that have come out today. You know, the Marvel comics were really kind of on their own. And, you know, Star Wars was really the first kind of comic series to pair with this idea of the movies. And so when these came out in 1983 through 1986, these were a big deal. I mean, Marvel, you know, the great Stan Lee, they were in charge of creating 34 brand new adventures to one of the best movies that had come out in such a long time, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and giving us this Indiana Jones-style adventure. And, you know, these are part of the expanded universe. They're part of the canon, you know. Although these comics are probably thinner than a piece of toast, there is a lot in here that is added to this idea of Indiana Jones. And they add to the story, they add to the tradition. You know, they're not 90-minute young indie feature movies, but these are as important, you know, as some of these other parts of the video games and the TV show. You know, they don't have the longevity or popularity of the Star Wars expanded universe, but they are a strong part of it, you know? And that's why we created this, you know, podcast, the Indiana Jones universe, you know, to create a community of fans who like the expanded universe, but also to inform and celebrate the great aspects of Indiana Jones beyond the films. And these comics, I think, are a great representation of that, and I'm a big, big fan of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, something I might like to see would be, you know, maybe this comic made into like a 45-minute TV show, kind of like Young Indy or something along those lines.
That would be fantastic. I would love to see a new TV show. Obviously, Star Wars, they're going on with The Mandalorian now, and that's a fantastic TV show. I would love a spin-off Indiana Jones show. I think it could work very well. And of course, they've thought a lot about, you know, this idea of, should Indiana Jones be kind of the next James Bond? You know, should you cast different people into it? And I mean, of course, you know, they're working on Star Wars now, but there's lots of opportunities in the future, especially with, we'll see how Indy 5 goes. And that will definitely lead to lots of, you know, great possibilities. I mean, Raiders is, you know, one of the best films of all time, you know, and to think, you know, that we've had so many, you know, expansions on that, you know, with these comics and Young Indy, it's fantastic. I was, I was thinking about the American Film Institute. They had their 100-year anniversary. I can't remember what year exactly, but when they did, they posted that list on their website of 100 best films of all time. And I remember Raiders was on there as number 60, which, of course, I obviously disagree with. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. But, I mean, it's on there. I mean, it's one of the best movies ever. And, you know, it's so interesting to think about the impact that Raiders has had and how it carried over to these comics. And, yeah, if you ever have a chance to check out the American Film Institute list, by the way, very fascinating. Orson Welles' Citizen Kane was number one. I expected Casablanca or Lawrence of Arabia, which I'd love to do as a bonus episode, but that movie is 4 hours long. It's crazy. But it would be an awesome comparison to T.E. Lawrence and Ned, who, you know, I know, Max, you love the character of Ned and this idea of Indy writing letters to him in young Indy. So fantastic. Star Wars is 15 on that list, too, which I found very surprising. I thought that'd be higher, but... yeah, it's a great list, and definitely check it out. I also think there's some movies on there that inspired Raiders, if I remember correctly. I think, what's that movie called? Treasure of the Sierra Madre, which inspired Raiders, was on there. And Stagecoach, which actually took the Desert Chase sequence, was taken from that movie, and they used it again in Hollywood Follies, the last episode of Young Indy there. So also some movies that inspired Indy are on there. But in any case... you know, it's a Raiders is a great film, and I think there's so much to like here from these comics that pay ode to the tradition of that.
I don't think Indy deserves, you know, a 60, but I think it more deserves maybe a 10 or a 20 on that list.
Oh, getting feisty.
You know I do. I mean, come on. It was a smash hit at the box office, so much so that some theaters still play it today, you know, occasionally, which is really, really cool and really awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love how theaters do that sometimes. You know, they'll play like a classic, you know, Raiders or Temple of Doom. But in any case, yeah, I think these comics are absolutely fantastic. And of course, we could talk about Raiders for hours. But I think that about concludes today's episode. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. Tell us what you think. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other podcast platforms. If you'd like to learn more about our podcast, you can visit our website at www.theindianajonesuniverse.com. We've got all our podcast episodes listed there for your listening convenience, as well as a great links page if you'd like to learn more about the expanded universe of Indiana Jones. And finally, to stay up to date on news and announcements and be part of the indie community here, you can like us and follow us over on our Facebook page at the Indiana Jones Universe Podcast. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Once again, I'm Max.
And I'm Will.
And until next time,
so long, Dr. Jones.